Each and every year, district and school mathematics leadership teams spend countless hours crafting lofty goals and monitoring plans, but struggle to state measurable improvement in effective teacher practice and, unfortunately, student gains.
If you've ever wondered how I can create a PD action plan that teachers view as useful and not just adding to their plates, if you're feeling like we have many of the necessary pieces, but we aren't clear on how to put them together to form an effective math program, or maybe you're wondering how I can structure my PD so I reach more teachers on a limited budget, or how can I get my educators to buy in to using research-based methods routinely, or even how can I get my teachers to become lifelong learners and take more ownership in their professional development journey?
Then this episode is for you. So stick around and you'll learn the four-stage process to craft PD action plans that bring alignment to fractured organizations, highlights bright spots to spread effective math teaching practices more quickly, and inspires more teachers to become lifelong learners.
Let's hit it. Welcome to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr. We are from MakeMathMoments.com.
This is the only podcast that coaches you through a six-step plan to grow your mathematics program, whether at the classroom level or at the district level.
And we do that by helping you cultivate and foster your mathematics program with strong, healthy, and balanced tree. So if you master the six parts of an effective mathematics program, the impact that you will have will grow and reach far and wide.
Every week, you'll get the insight you need to stop feeling overwhelmed, gain back your confidence, and get back to enjoying the planning and facilitating of your mathematics program for the students or educators you serve.
All right, Kyle, here's what we're going to do. We are actually releasing our latest training for district leaders on the four stages that we use with district partners to gain the goals and measurable PD results that you've been after. And we held this training back live on February 27th, 2024. And we had many, many leaders join us in that live session. We wanted to release it here for you to listen to so that you can also gain your planning, gain the same objectives, learn about the four-stage process that you could put into place starting tomorrow, starting whenever. So if you're listening to this going into a school year or even in mid-school year, you can still gain some traction by following the process or starting that process by listening to this show.
And just as an aside, you mentioned leaders. If you're listening to this podcast, you are a leader, whether it's formalized or not, whether you're a classroom teacher, a consultant, a coach, a principal, a superintendent. If you're listening to a show like this, you are a leader. We had a lot of classroom teachers who take on a leadership role in their building and their grade level team. So if that's you, stick around, check it out, because this might just give you the next step in your journey with the group of educators that you are working with or serving. So here we go.
Folks, we're ready to roll here, and we know that you're joining us here because we're going to talk about what's important coming into planning for next year in 2024, 2025, math district professional development-wise, what our action plans are going to look like. And in this webinar, so we got about 75 minutes here together, and what we want to do is outline the four stages that we've been using successfully with districts across North America on helping them decide on what matters most, but also this four-step plan or this four-stage plan is really what's required to get the change that we're after. And we're really excited to share the four stages with you. And we're really looking at this being a work period, almost like this work time. And we're going to share with you our workbook. We have a very detailed workbook with templates, with action steps, with different pieces of learning along the way. So by going through this workbook, we're going to share with the workbook a little later on how you can access it. Everyone here is going to get a copy of this workbook, but the workbook kind of is exactly the workbook we use with our district partners so that basically walks them through and you through what do we need to start. And then when we complete the workbook, we're going to have an action plan in place. We will know what matters the most. And we'll also have a plan in place to not let these things fall off the radar. And I think that's sometimes one of the biggest kind of components of setting plans and then making sure that those plans come true.
Absolutely. So this workbook is awesome. It has been something that we've been working on for the past couple of years. And for those friends John was referring to, those are some of our district partnership partners. They have been along the journey working on little segments of this along the way in our planning process. So friends, you're going to have an opportunity to dig into this a little bit later. One thing I also want to mention, though, is this is hard work. I would like to acknowledge this right from the beginning, that this webinar isn't going to suddenly make this problem go away tomorrow. What we're going to do is we're going to help you build that flywheel, which is going to take some people a little longer than others, because some of you are wearing one hat, some of you are wearing two hats, some of you are wearing too many hats. You haven't even been able to count them yet because you wear a lot of hats in your world. So keep in mind that the pace at which you're going to go is going to differentiate based on your particular situation. So while you are sharing where you're coming to us from, we see a lot of people joining us. We're approaching 200 math leaders from around the world, which is awesome. Furthest I saw was India. Keep that coming to the chat. We want to get us started here with a pebble. We would love to hear about a pebble that is in your math leader's shoe, and ultimately why you thought it might be a good idea to join us here and join this group so that we can together try to shake out as many of those pebbles here today. So go ahead and share that pebble in your math leader's shoe in the chat. It's probably not the only one, but share the one that's sort of top of mind, the one that you can feel right now rattling around in there.
I'm curious because there's so many pebbles we hear all the time about what is the priority or what is the most important thing we should kind of pluck from that shoe so that, you know, we're walking down that path a little bit easier. Kyle, what are you seeing?
Well, I saw one that, as my dog in the background is choking here away, hopefully you can't hear too much of that. But one pebble that I saw coming up was this idea of failing students, and the language mentioned being okay with it. And I'm going to reframe it because I'm going to guess that what they're probably saying is being able to like somehow sleep at night knowing that there are some students that we are not being able to help with all of the effort that we're making. That is certainly a pebble that is in our shoes. So it's like, what can we do so that we can continue the work and work hard to help all of those students without allowing that to suck the energy from us? Because that's one of the challenges that we face in this role. John, what's another one that you saw?
Yeah, I am hearing this one, not just, I saw it here in the chat, about competing demands. You know, there's so often in our roles that we have these things that we want to accomplish, these goals that we want to set for ourselves. And we imagine this is what we want our classrooms to look like. But then there's other demands that come at us. Like you said, Kyle, at the beginning of this is like a lot of us are wearing many hats. And then it's like, where do I place the focus? And I want that to get done and I want that to get done, but I got to do that. And it's so much demand on us. And if we want to focus on really what matters, this Steve had written, trying to provide enough time for necessary content-specific PD, which is a big focus of ours in the work that we're doing.
I see another one here, Rose. I have this visual in my mind. She's saying, I'm spinning so many plates. So kind of like this wearing different hats, but spinning so many plates, different initiatives. I don't know what to focus on with PD so that I'm intentional with everyone's time. That is definitely something that people are challenged with. And today we're going to give you some strategies to help you get yourself planned and organized so that you can start making a move in the right direction. Because guess what? There is no easy answer to what should you be doing now, because the answer is all of it, but that's impossible. So we want to help you so that you can get all of it down, and then we can craft an actual pathway so that you can start making progress towards accomplishing those things.
Yeah. So we're going to kick things off, keep them rolling here because we want to see some of those pebbles. We're going to save the chat too for a little later. We'll share that chat out after the webinar. We'll get the workbook in your hands after the webinar. We'll get the recording in your hands after the webinar. But what we're hoping to achieve here, we've got a few kind of goals ourselves for this next hour, is we want to give you a clear step-by-step process to craft a unified vision for mathematics. I did see that pebble in the shoe about this kind of clear picture of what everyone should have for what math
teaching and learning should look like. So we're going to kind of unpack that and how to kind of go through that. Which are the steps that we should do to create kind of that pathway so that, you know, we're not left going, throwing stuff at the wall every year, going like, I want to try that. And then not realizing if it's sticking. We want to kind of create a plan so that we know it's sticking in the end. Kyle, what else are we going to do here?
I love it. We're also going to be looking at a systematized approach. Here's the problem. Keyword for me when I was in that district leader position for over a decade, where systematizing was something was not my strength at the time, right? So we've been working on this ultimately to solve our own challenges that we've experienced in these roles. So we're going to help you with that systemized approach and so that you can actually create and roll out that action plan regardless of budget. Because budget for me, I used to use that as sort of a hindrance that I couldn't like get the work done. The reality is the budget is only going to allow the time at which it takes you, the length of time it's going to take you. We need to continue the work. We just need to be more creative and we need to be more intentional about it because we want to hit those key results by the due dates that you set for yourself in a realistic, attainable sort of manner.
Yeah, awesome, awesome stuff. The other thing that we want to give you and talk about here in this hour is to figure out what is the most important component that your PD action plan probably hasn't been including. And how do we bring that into our PD action plans for this year, finishing off this year? Can we sneak it in? And also planning for next year. We're going to talk about what that component is and how do we make sure that we hit it? Because it unlocks almost everything moving forward here. Kyle, in the last.
The last one, and I'm going to say shout out to James. Lots of love for James' comment around this idea of trying to like sort of shift educator thinking, right? Shifting their teaching practices. He'd use the word convince. We're going to talk about essential components on how we can actually emerge. Like we have the word build here, but I want you to envision this, that we need our teachers to actually have the epiphany that they are going to do this work because they now see it. They now make sense of what it is that we're trying to share with them. Because sometimes it feels as though you care about the work and it seems like maybe some of our educators don't care about the work, but in reality, they're just not seeing what you're seeing yet. And that is one of the pieces that we really want to help you with here today.
Yeah. And if you don't know who Kyle and I are, you're like, hey, I signed on to this webinar and I'm just kind of figuring things out. I thought these topics were really important and I'm here to learn. I'm not sure, but if it's possible you've listened to our podcast before, I don't know if there's any listeners out there. Give us a shout out in the chat if you've listened to some episodes. Maybe even say you've listened to a few because Kyle and I have been putting out weekly episodes on the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast for 5-6 years. So there's like over 250 episodes for you to listen to that are all around pebbles that are in our current teacher's shoes. How do we shake them out? What are the things that we're dealing with in our classroom? We've got thought leaders coming on the podcast, sharing their thoughts. So I don't know. We've got some folks in there listening, but the other thing Kyle and I are doing on a regular basis is we are helping school districts change their math instruction. And really what we believe is that there's 6 key areas that are really required to strengthen a professional development program at the district level or at the school level, a few steps up from our classroom level. And we always think of these things like a tree, like a balanced, strong, healthy tree. And in that tree, those 6 areas can be made up of the trunk of the tree, which is like our leadership portion of the tree. We've got content knowledge. We've got mindset and beliefs. These are all important things. We got the professional development plan, which we're going to talk about here today. We talk about teacher moves. Like these are the important things that we should be thinking about. And then finally, resources. All 6 of these areas are really important. And what we've got is that really our 4-stage process we're going to unpack today addresses all 6 areas. So that you're planning appropriately to make sure that all 6 areas are strengthened. And the reality is that some of these things we're doing well at, some of these things we could be improving at. We can always be strengthening that tree up. So just to give us a little bit of a framework is that a lot of times, this was also in the chat as one of the pebbles,
is that when we start to think about strengthening our professional development tree up, our district program level tree, we often think about the soil, the water, and the sunlight, which is our mindset and teacher's mindset. And Kyle and I have been meeting with school districts across North America. We've probably had over 200 meetings with people just like you in the last year. And the most common pebble that comes out of that is about how do we help educators shift their practice? And when we dug into some of the research, you know, there's some a little bit of research. This paper that we found particularly interesting was about how and why teachers change their classroom practices. We realized that in the paper outlines, there are some key factors that play into how do we help our teachers shift their practice. And there's some internal factors, which I think we all realize. But then there are some external factors that I think maybe we may take for granted. And all of these factors actually get addressed in this four stages that we're going to outline today. But specifically, if we think of the external factors, there's something that often does get overlooked, and that is about kind of that shared vision. So many of those 200 conversations we had, right, Kyle, in these last year, teachers are kind of missing, or district leaders are kind of missing this shared vision. It's like, I think I have a good vision of what math should look like in our class, but not everybody has that same shared vision.
Yeah. It's almost like if you can imagine taking teachers and everyone's wearing blindfolds and you sort of say, all right, let's go do this work together. And you all start walking. And then you take the blindfold off and you recognize that actually only like a couple people are with you and everyone else is in a different direction. Without that shared vision, we don't know where they think they're trying to go to. And a lot of times we interpret that. We're human, we're emotional, right? And oftentimes as leaders, we sort of just think it should be innate for everyone to think like us. But the reality is, the Kyle I know today as a math educator is a very different Kyle than I was at the beginning of my career. And if you take a moment right now and think about your own journeys and how much you have learned along that journey, how much other people have had an influence on you, either explicitly or implicitly, and then just think about all of the work that you've done yourself in order to help you sort of build or maybe even reshape your beliefs about mathematics. Because I'm going to be open and honest here today and say, when I began this journey as a math educator, I thought I was coming in to tell the kids what they needed to do, and I was going to help make it as easy as possible for them to learn that material. And I had done my work. And I very quickly recognized when I got into that classroom that it was about me and maybe three other kids that actually wanted to be there that day. And the reality is that sometimes we do this in our PD sessions as well. We assume that everyone in the room has had all of the same experience that we've had, but yet they haven't. They have walked a very different path. They've had maybe a really rough class for the past few years, or they haven't seen what conceptual understanding looks like. So these external factors are some of the factors that we tend to ignore or overlook. And yet, these are the factors that we can have the greatest impact and influence on in the roles that we have. Whereas these internal factors, they take time. They take a lot of intentional effort in order for educators to get what we're hoping they will get, which is I want them to build their confidence. I want them to have initiative in these roles as an educator. I want them to be adaptable. But those things are much harder for us to change and influence. We tend to leapfrog over the shared vision, the team learning, the systems thinking, and we tend to try to attack these internal factors, which actually oftentimes creates more separation between us and our educators than bringing them closer together and closer to that change in beliefs and approach that we're after.
Yeah. So we're going to dig in here in the four stages. So here are the four stages that we use when we work with districts to make change, to set action plans in place. And the four stages are design and measure, optimize and sustain, build capacity, and inspire growth. And none of these things are like groundbreaking. But I think where we've been making the most success and progress is when we think about these four stages as a flywheel. So think about a flywheel for a sec. Like a flywheel is this big turnstile thing that generates electricity and we have to turn it. When you first start a flywheel, it takes immense effort, power to just budge that wheel, and we push it, and then
every time that every rotation that that wheel goes around, it gets easier and easier because the momentum is taking it around. And that's the way we see the four stages that we implement and that we're going to share here with you today, is that we want to start. It takes a lot of effort to design and measure what our PD action plans are going to look like. How do we optimize and sustain them so that we're creating a plan that can last years to years? Because the reality is there is such high turnover in our roles, but also the teacher roles that we're working with. So we want to create a sustainable program that can continue past the personnel that are in these spaces. We're going to talk about why we need to build capacity and what that really means. But when you think about it, each stage builds into the next, because if I can build capacity with teachers, that leads into inspiring their growth so that they take ownership and treat their professional development, their own personal professional development, the same way you treat your personal professional development. So we're building into that same growth. So think about coming in through a year and going, hey, I've inspired growth in teachers because I took action on the PD plan that we're talking about here today. And then think about planning for next year, how that becomes easier because we've built in this kind of momentum. And as the years go on, this momentum builds and builds and builds, and it's been sustainable. It takes off and you've got the change that we've been after all this time. You can take each one separately, but it's them all acting together that makes that real change.
And I want you to think too about this idea of that flywheel and have that visual of John kind of trying to get that flywheel going. Oftentimes, we tend to try to rush through, especially the design and measure phase of our planning. So we try on a yearly basis, we try to get a new flywheel going. And then at the end of that year, we're like, whew, that was a lot of work. I just got that one rotation done. And then we're like, oh man, that was hard. We didn't get as far. It was really hard. And guess what? We get to start a new flywheel for next year. And really what we want people thinking about is that, you know what, if we're actually more intentional, and even we have some of our district partners on this call right now that took some time for them to recognize that, oh my gosh, I thought oftentimes they would come into our program and they would come into the design and measure phase and they would think like after one call together that we would have a plan. And then we would start that flywheel. And what many of our partners recognize is that actually there's a lot of effort that goes into this design and measure phase if we want this flywheel to gain momentum. If we want to just quickly try to get through it as best we can, put as much energy and effort into it, and then start a new one next year, then we're going to keep doing what we've done in the past. So designing and measuring can often be, I'll call it sneaky, in that it takes a lot of time and effort in order to do what is required, which as you see on the screen is actually creating the clear and measurable vision and action plan for mathematics. What I think is some of the most important learning that we can do with our leadership teams is when the leadership team themselves recognize that, oh my gosh, I thought we were all on exactly the same page. And in reality, we're working in the same general direction, but we actually don't have that clarity that's going to make it easier in time for us to all do the work we do, which is sharing this work with the other individuals. Remember, if we're trying to actually have an impact with our educators and ultimately on the education of the students in our classrooms, that's a long way to get to. We've got to be clear in which what we're trying to do, because if John goes off this way and I go off that way and I'm working with this group of teachers and he's working with that group of teachers, what we ultimately end up with is the spaghetti at the wall method, right? And we like to look at it as all these puzzle pieces. Nobody's going around the district and doing bad teaching practices, right? Or they're not trying to promote things we don't want to see happen. But if there's no clarity, what we find is everyone's just kind of pushing these puzzle pieces around, but they don't know what that finished puzzle will ultimately look like once we get there. Hey, Math Moment Makers, Kyle here, and I've got just a quick message specifically for our district-level mathematics decision makers out there. Do you feel like you're spinning your wheels when making district-level goals for mathematics programming from kindergarten through grade 12? Setting new goals each year only to find little to no real shift in pedagogical practice or educator content knowledge across the district as a whole? Take a moment to book a short call with our team so we can learn more about your specific district and educator learning needs in mathematics so we can assist you in taking the first step of many in the right direction. Visit makemathmoments.com/district to book a web call with our team today. We have a limited number of spots for districts just like yours, so don't wait. Head to makemathmoments.com/district and grab a spot in our calendar now.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. And when we think about it, the research here supports us too, because last year we did a webinar around, it was a little later in the year, but I think it was like in the spring on vision planning, on goal setting, just like we're doing this year. We want to continue that and give folks like you kind of or the reminders of what's important. But the research kind of supports this. We wrote an article last year based off Alan Schoenfeld's article about why teaching and learning math is so difficult. And what they were saying in his article, which what we kind of built on in our article, was really that school mathematics, he started this way, is that school mathematics is the fossilized remains of real reasoning and improving. And the article kind of goes into three big areas, but the biggest area I want to kind of tackle here just in this first part about vision planning is that cultural surround. Because when we think about the cultural surround, it's like, what are the surrounding things that affect our success in the work that we do with teachers? Because that's real hard. And really what happens, and the article explains this, and actually the article that we shared above, I'm just going to bring it back up here. This one here as well said, the external factors that we can influence, the cultural surround that we can influence has to have that shared vision. And if we don't have that shared vision, then we're acting like what Kyle said. We've got these pieces of the puzzle that we're pushing around. And if we haven't communicated what that plan looks like to all key stakeholders, then we've got people kind of shooting for different things. And Kyle, you've often talked about there are pockets of success in different areas, but without this unified vision of where we need to go, real change doesn't happen. Because you know that you've got a teacher who's not going to take a risk to go down a pathway if they're not supported at all levels. If you've got a coach in a classroom that's saying, like, I think the most important thing that you should try in your classroom is this, this, and this, and let's try to structure your classroom like that. And then you get pushback from the teacher because the teacher is saying, like, that's tough, that's hard, I'm not sure. And we don't see the change, even though we got into those classrooms. It's because the vision is not shared across all levels. It's like the coach has the vision. They have not yet convinced the teacher that that's the vision, but they also, the administrator, the direct supervisor, if they don't support the vision, then when there's pushback, because maybe we didn't cover everything in the curriculum that year because we were trying new things, which is going to happen. And that parents are calling going, hey, what's going to happen here? Like, my kid didn't cover everything. And the principal's like, well, let me get to the bottom of this. There's no vision there. Why would the teacher want to take that chance? The teacher's not going to take that chance. And then they just say, oh, I don't have time. But really what they're saying is, I don't feel supported in the vision that you have. And it's not my vision because I'm not sure that that's the right vision. So there is so much power in when we create that unified vision of where we want to go and where the teachers want to go. Because the reality is we've got lots of different visions. And the question that we need to answer, the question we all need to answer in this first kind of stage is, have we communicated our vision of mathematics to the key stakeholders at all levels? And how did we create them? And have we created a vision? Because this is one of the areas that when we talk with districts, those 200 calls that we had over the last year with district leaders like yourselves coming into, you know, just starting this process, all have gone, I didn't have a vision. And I've never communicated it to the people that I'm working with at any of the levels. So that's this first stage. And what we want to do is we want to unpack the step-by-step process and give you kind of the things that you need to think about so that you do create a unified vision. Kyle, got anything to say before we kind of unpack those three steps?
No, I love it. I think we carried on. You did a great job there. So let's chat a little bit about this. So ultimately, some of you, if you were with us last time, we're reiterating a few of the early details, but we're not going to go as in-depth to this particular portion. So some of you might go, oh, I recognize this from our last webinar. So we want to bring it back up because this work is really important work, and it's not work that you do one time. We like to call it your magic wand wish list. This is something that you can do in smaller groups up at the leadership table level, but then you need to waterfall this work down. We need to engage as many of those involved in this work as possible, because if it's only a group of five people that have a vision and they have a wish list, and then we just assume that the wish list items are all the same across the district, it will lead us to harder opportunities to try to shift and share that clear vision. So we want to make sure that we're spending enough time to do that. And that's one of our first steps. You'll notice up on the screen, there's a quick little link here, makemathmoments.com/your goals. We'll be sending you these details along the way. But this is a first step for those of you who are going, you know what, we actually haven't sat together as a team to start this work. You're going to want to start some of this work with your team, including this magic wand wish list.
Actually, it'll be a different link. So if you went there, it will bring you to a different, but we got an updated page. So look for the link in the chat a little bit later. We'll make that correction. So it'll be a slightly different link than that exact one. But the second step, Kyle, is once we kind of map out what we envision for what our classrooms should look like on our magic wand wish list, the next action we need to do, and this is also in the workbook that we're going to share, all of these templates, all of these kind of prompts are in the workbook that we'll share. There's space for you to map out where you want to, like, what your magic wand wish list is, what are your objectives. But that's this process right here, because what we've pulled from the What Matters, Measure What Matters book is that nothing gets done unless you measure it. And what we have to do is we can't just say, this is what we want in our math class. We actually have to be more precise than that. We have to actually plan out what is it that we hope to achieve. And that when we create our objectives, because the workbook will walk you through, and we have videos that walk you through how to do all of these things. And when we think about our objectives, these are the things that we want to see change or achieve by the end of this year or next year, or maybe it's a 3-year plan, but these are like your goals. These are the big goals. These are the things that we were like, I want to see change here. I want to see that we want to work through in my classroom productive struggle on a regular basis. Even just saying that is an important goal. It doesn't say give you all the steps to do that. It's saying this is a focus for us for this year. And the thing that you want to remember when you're crafting objectives is you don't want too many. Because you could say, like, I want that. I want all the 8 effective teaching practices. I want to make sure all the 5 proficiencies of mathematics are covered. I want all of that in my classroom because I wrote it all in my magic wand wish list. The problem is if you focus on too many, you focus on none. And so we recommend with the groups that we work with, the districts we work with, to pick 3 at most. Because if you pick 3, that's still loads of work. Still loads. You're seeing one of our templates in the background, and that's one of the districts had built that based off some of the work that they did. And you can see a little glimpse there that they had picked problem solving through productive struggle as a main focus for the work they're doing this year. And it's the next process, the K and the R part, that is what's created above that little blurb there, which is our measuring our key results. Measuring our key results are going like, well, what are we hoping to achieve? Can I create a measurable goal that is reliable, is attainable? How do I write that goal? We have, again, it's in the workbook, videos that walk you through how to do that so that you have a set of goals that you can achieve and you write them as if they already happened, and it gives you the targets to work through. And so because if we don't write them down, then we're going to get to the end of the year and we're going to do that spaghetti at the wall approach. It's through the objectives and the key results process that we do need to do. Like what Kyle said is that process takes time. That's the beginning of the flywheel that does take some time to get going. So that's why we picked today as the start day of this webinar for next year, because we know it takes time to develop our objectives, our key results, so that when we hit the next school year, we're hitting the ground running. We want to do this planning up front.
Hey there, Math Moment Makers. Are you a dedicated listener? Like, I'm talking, have you been listening for a couple months, maybe even a couple years? Well, if you haven't taken a moment to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform, it would mean so much to us. It'll take you under 1 minute so that you can help more educators see and experience the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. Do us this huge solid. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And here is today's episode. Now, one thing I think is worth mentioning here, John, on the OKRs is this idea that, don't get me wrong, I think most districts, almost all districts, are setting goals and they're setting measurable results, right? But what we often see and is very common is that we take a massive leap from the objectives or the objectives are way too lofty and not clear enough as to what we're actually going to do to actually make a real dent. And then the measured goal that we actually have, or our measurable that we use, is actually something that's related to student outcomes. And yet the work we're doing in our district isn't necessarily going to have an impact in the short term on student outcomes immediately. So what we want to do is we want to tighten these things up. Now, you can still have this overarching longer term goal that, of course, the reason we're doing this work is to help students, and we're hoping more students can achieve at higher levels so that all students can reach their fullest potential. Of course, that's what we want. And we want to state that as a district. That's what we're after. But when it comes to the actual work we're going to do this year, we want to make sure that we get more specific around what are the objectives that we're going to be focusing on this year, and what should we see happening if we're successful? What is going to happen if we're successful in that activity? We're still going to have to craft a plan in between, but we want to make sure that what we're saying we're going to do and then what we're measuring are actually linked, so we can figure out whether we're getting closer or whether we need to do some modifying as we move forward.
Yeah, what you're seeing on the screen is the measurable part, because I think that's the key part, is measuring what you want to see change in. Like what Kyle's saying is, like, we could use student data, but if I want to see change in a pedagogical move, if I want to see change in teachers' proficiency on mathematics for their content, what grade level they're teaching, then I better measure that. That's the important part I think most districts miss, is they wait for the student data to come out to see if they made a change, if it worked. You don't have to wait for that. We do want to see. We do want to keep track. Those are important goals to set for ourselves as well. But we can measure what we want to see a change in. And if we don't, then again, you're at the spaghetti at the wall. You won't know if the work that you put in this year had the impact that you were hoping for. So we want to create those measurable goals. Like what you're seeing on the screen here is the instructional shifts survey that one of our school districts used to measure one of their key results, so that they were like, we want to see a change here. We've got the exact number that we want to see a change in. We did a pre-assessment. We did a post-assessment on the thing that we wanted to see the change. And we now know that we moved the needle in that direction. And the goal is eventually we're going to move the needle in student data. Like, that is the ultimate goal. But we are going to measure what matters most. And this is Gwen from Holmdel Township Public Schools. When Gwen spent a lot of she spent the appropriate amount of time developing her objectives, thinking about her key results. But what she did well, and Kyle, you'll echo this, is that Gwen wanted to do this from a grassroots program. Like, she wanted her teachers in on the measuring, her teachers in on the objectives and setting those objectives. What were the pebbles in our teachers' shoes? And she held a series of sessions with her teachers to build, go through the magic wand wish list, go through the objective settings with her teachers, so that they created this unified vision together. And at the end, the teachers are saying, we now feel ownership, which is another thing coming up a little bit later. We feel ownership in the learning that we've done here because we spent time developing our objectives and our key results. Her teachers are coming up to her, like you can see in the quote here, the teachers were coming up to her saying, like, that session that we did on vision planning was the most important and the most impactful PD they've had in years.
Now, John, this brings up another piece here because, okay, so we have Gwen, who went in and actually is a more recent partner in our program, which is fantastic. She's off to the races and had a really successful session. Awesome. Doesn't always work out that way the first time. And that's something that's really important. I want to come back to the chat because Candace had asked, what if the teachers don't agree with the vision of admin, of what the vision of the admin have and what research shows? I.e., what if they are on board that the standard algorithms and drill facts are what is needed? And I would argue that that is going to happen in a lot of places. And the reality is that that is probably your first objective, is that, whoa, wait a second. I can set the objectives. The easy answer in life is you go to the research, right? And this is how we've done it traditionally in school districts. We go to the research, we see what it says. We usually only pick parts of it. We don't read enough into it to actually understand all of the pieces that need to be intact for it to work successfully and get the same result from the research. So that's a negative. But we then bring it to educators and we tell them, we say, this is what's going to help us. We're going to do X, Y, and Z. So go do it. And what that reminds me of is back when I was in the math classroom and I said to the kids, hey, Use the standard algorithm. It's the quickest way you're going to find after you tinker around with all this math stuff that at the end of the day, the quickest way to get the answer is this. And then I pause, and then I zoom out, and then I recognize that what we tend to do at the district level or at the leadership level is exactly what we're asking teachers not to do with their students. We say that we want them to inquire. We want them to learn. We want them to productively struggle. We want them to think. We want them to communicate. We want them to do all of these things. But yet, because we have tightened timelines, that sounds familiar. I remember that in the classroom. Because we have a tightening budget, I remember that in the classroom too. Because we have all of these outside factors that are hard to control, I remember having that issue in the classroom too. We rush, as we used to say in the classroom, we rush to the algorithm. Well, we rush to the PD plan. We rush to the vision. We rush to the answer that's going to save the day, even if the answer is right. Even if we know 100% that it's right. The problem is it's such a hard thing to do when we come in and try to implement it instead of build it. And I know a lot of people will push back on that. I used to be this person. I would push back and say, we can't wait for these kids. These kids are in the classroom now and we need to do something. And I agree with you. But if we are going to go in there and just keep banging our heads against the wall because it's the thing that's the right thing to do, I'm going to look at that and I'm going to go, I want the most effective thing. And what we know and what we know from research is that we need that collective vision. And that means that maybe my district and my context might require additional work in the vision planning section, which means that flywheel, you're going to spend a lot more time trying to get that vision flywheel going, designing and measuring, because guess what? Before you actually can design and measure, you've got to make sure that everybody's on board with you. Because if they're not on board, you can design and measure all you want. It's not going to have the impact, at least to the level that you're hoping for over time.
In Gwen's situation, what we did was we planned for that, Kyle, is that session, we worked with her closely to figure out what she anticipated her teachers to say in their magic wand wish list. And what we did is we anticipated, just like we want our teachers to anticipate what students are doing, we anticipated what they would say so that we can craft that discussion to steer their responses into the objectives that we are looking for. You're doing the planning up front, and then you want to carefully craft those sessions so that at the end of the day, you're in alignment. Their pebbles that they're saying are in alignment with where your focus and your research is focused. So, for example, Gwen anticipated that her teachers are going to say, kids need to know their basic math facts. They just need to know them. That's going to be what all the teachers are going to say. But what we said is like, okay, they're going to say that. So how do we want to steer that into one of the objectives that you know are important, which is building procedural fluency from conceptual understanding? Because those two are the things that are linked. Teachers are saying, I want math facts, which what they're really saying is teachers want fluency in their students. So is it okay? And this is a line that Gwen would say during her session is that, is it okay? You saying basic math facts, I completely agree. We want fluency with basic number sense in our students. Is it okay on our vision plan that I write fluency with number sense and operation? And everyone's going to be like, that makes sense. And now we've got a way to talk about fluency and number sense and operation for the remainder of this year and next year. And because the teachers wanted it, it's just going to, the support that we give those teachers and the focus of the learning that's going to happen for those teachers is probably different than the way they anticipated what basic math facts looks like. Because the research supports, if I'm going to change basic math facts, I need to come at it from this way. So we want to do that in those vision planning sessions, is anticipate what teachers are going to say and then have a pathway forward to blend them together so that everyone's aligned on what really matters. So that brings us, Kyle, into kind of the stage two, which is optimize and sustain, which is, let's say we come out the other side. Remember, everything's in the workbook. So if you go through stage one in the workbook, you're going to have an opportunity to write down where your objectives are. You should come out the other side of that workbook with objectives, key results, with dates and times, all mapped out for the year in your action plans. So then it becomes, how do I, if I have all these things, how do I build that sustainable and scalable program? How do I keep this going? It's a flywheel. How do I make sure that the things I said actually come true? And how do I unroll that on a limited budget. And this is, goes into that waterfall method that you've often talked about, Kyle, is some of the work that we have to do in the optimize and sustain is, since we're working with our existing PD structures, we're working with, some school districts have coaches in every school. Some districts don't. And there's a lone wolf like you. You might be a lone wolf right now going, I'm the only one responsible for professional development in my district. I don't have a bank of coaches like some districts. It's me. So it's, how do we plan for rolling out all of, in achieving all of these goals when I'm on limited support? We have to ask ourselves, and who are the people I'm supporting? And if I'm going to make sure that I have an aligned vision for all key stakeholders, I better have a plan that supports me. I better have a plan that supports classroom teachers. I better have a plan that supports administrators, because otherwise, we already talked about that alignment. If it's not there, it's not going to work. We also, if I have coaches, if I have people that are in the classrooms doing some of the work, how do I support them? Because often they get overlooked, Kyle, that we want these things for our teachers, but what do the coaches need so that they can also implement that for the teachers? It's like a trickle-down waterfall method, and you have to plan at all levels. You have to make goals and procedures and think about those objectives for all levels. Like this was Christine. Christine is from here in Ontario at the Huron-Perth Classic District School Board. She planned her three big objectives, and she planned it by stage. This is the objectives. These are the key results that we're planning out for the administrative level. They made sure that they're aligned with the objectives. All three objectives were in every level. This is the objectives that they were planning out for school level, principals and support staff at the schools. These are the classroom expectations. This is how we're going to roll that out here. So first and foremost, the plan of attack has to be, how do we roll this out? In the workbook, we've included a template on how to unpack the work that you're doing. But Kyle, I want you to bring up this idea of, like, once, if I start to think about all those in that waterfall method, you've often talked about this breadcrumb approach, which is a really great approach that some of our districts are working with on, how do I get the nuggets that I need when I'm a lone wolf or I only have a small group to work with?
Yeah. And this, you have to really be flexible in your thinking, which is hard to do because some of you are going, I have a big team. Here's my challenges. Some of you are on your own. Some of you are, and I'm looking at one of them in the chat right now, or not in the chat, but in the room right now, who is in a place where they feel like they're on an island. Okay. And they might know who they are that I'm talking about. And the reality is that doing this work can happen at a small level. It can happen in a bigger team. It can happen at any level, but you have to go at the speed of learning and progress. All right. So you have to be able to set yourself some goals that are going to be attainable. If it's you pulling the weight on your own right now, guess what? Your work right now is, how do I bring more people on my leadership team on board, right? If your leadership team is all gung-ho and they want to, normally they come up with this big plan and we go and march into the district and we do that. Now we have to go, okay, how do we together, how do we help the district feel like this process is built together? Regardless of who you are and what stage you are at, all of these aspects can be applied. You just have to be realistic in terms of the progress that you're making. And one thing we hear from a lot of people is maybe funding is tight. Maybe there's a shortage in substitute teachers in order to bring teachers out for PD. So we can't do PD. So we have the option to just throw our hands in the air and say there will be no learning this year. Or we can start doing some sort of breadcrumbing. And this idea for me has been helpful in my experience here. It's been helpful for many of the different district leaders that we're working with. And it looks and sounds very differently based on your circumstance. So this idea of breadcrumbing is figuring out what it is. What is this goal that you're after? Maybe focusing on one objective first and figuring out, how do I slowly breadcrumb the intended audience along so that we can get closer and closer to that outcome? So up on the screen, you'll see there's a bit of a spreadsheet template there that we have more recently been formalizing because different leaders have been doing different things. But it gives you a sense as to, just to get some planning down to go, okay, what is it that I'm going to do? Because oftentimes we pull hard on the flywheel to get that vision set, the objective set, may or may not have included all stakeholders in that work. But then we land on this and then we go hard and we try to like get the message out. And then we kind of come back and we're like, whew, that was hard. And then we're, next thing you know, you're next year and you haven't made the progress that you want to make. So what does it look like each month, each week, each quarter, each semester, each whatever that chunk of time is for you, to keep that momentum going, because every breadcrumb that we can create in this process is additional momentum that you're adding to that flywheel, so that you're not going out and doing the one and done PD. We've all been there before. Okay. I don't think there's anyone in this room, if you've ever done a PD session, you have done a one and done PD session. You went in, you brought the information, and then disappeared, because guess what? You were on to the next thing. We've all been there. Don't beat yourself up for it. But if we can be more intentional about what we do in between, then we can actually build that momentum and start seeing that flywheel get that momentum, so we can keep it rolling.
What I love about this touch point map is that when you think about, if I'm planning for all kind of groupings, teachers, admins, coaches, even parents, is when I map it out on this calendar approach, that if I say, what are my channels of touch points? I got email, I'm going to have one-on-one coaching meetings, we're going to have these group sessions. You know that you've got group sessions planned out already for the year or coming up in the next year.
Don't forget parents either, John, like Center Voice or the automatic call home once a month. You want a call that's reminding parents about what it is you're trying to do in mathematics, just a 10-second call. Whatever tool you have, you get to add to this schedule.
Yeah, you want to customize based off the channels you have. And then when you map it out for the year, you can say, look, as long as I now in this month hit this, this, and this. Imagine that if you use Kyle's breadcrumb strategy and plan out those emails that are going to go out on nuggets of information. And if those emails were going out to teachers or coaches, that if the administrator in that particular group read every single email you wrote every month, then did you take them from here to here on some of the learning that they needed to know on the vision and the planning that you've been working on, and make sure that alignment is there? And if they did, think about how much further down the line they are because of that breadcrumb strategy you took. Now, not every administrator is going to open every single email. Hopefully they do, because of their workload and because of their time constraints. But imagine that you planned it out and they did. And you've now got this nice roadmap for them to follow. And the same would be true for the coaches you're working with. The same is true for the teachers you're working with. You know that you've got these sessions planned out. Like, you know that administrators are getting together every couple of months to do some planning, and you math typically will get a slot in there. Map out where, what are the big areas that you need to hit so that your objectives are achieved for that group.
What makes this really hard to do is that it's hard to do this work without doing the vision planning work and deciding on what those OKRs are, right? So what ends up happening, and the reason why these types of strategies sort of fall apart, is that if, let's say, there is a PD, it's like, instead of the question being, what could we do? The question is, what is next in the journey, right? And if I know what the journey is for me right now, based on the objectives that I've set, even if it's one objective, you might be working on one right now, that might be your thing. You know what it is that you want to do next. So there's never a question mark. And they go, hey, the math consultant has 20 minutes at the principal's meeting to share. What would you like to share? That should be like, oh my gosh, I can't wait, because next in this journey is this part that I wanted to do, instead of it being like, what could I do? What would be helpful right now, right? Like, we want it to be a filter for you so that you know exactly what it is you're trying to get to. And any new opportunity that you have to share allows you to get just a little further down that path. But if we're making the path as we go, if we're just kind of randomly putting down the patio stones as we go, I've been there, I've done it, I know how it is. And all of a sudden, it's like you've zigzagged all over the place. And guess what? There's probably missing patio stones all along the way. And that's just another visual that kind of brings us back to the spaghetti at the wall. Hopefully it was useful. Hopefully someone got something, and may or may not lead to sustainable growth.
Totally, totally. Okay, so that brings us to the third stage. It's thinking about, how do we make sure we sustain the work that we just said was important? I was optimized and sustained. Now, going into building capacity, Kyle, I would say every time we've met with a school district from across North America, we always end up figuring out there is one area that you probably not planned for in your professional development in the past, and we need to make sure we include it moving forward. And that's something that we've always worked in, which is in that building capacity stage. We always make sure, every district that we work with, we always make sure there's a piece around this area
so that we can build capacity in our teachers. And it really comes down to, if you think back to that piece of research that we looked at last year from Alan Schoenfeld about what typically is happening in schools. And every leader in here knows that this is what a lot of their classrooms are looking like. The math is being taught amidst what matters when engaging in real problem solving. We've got rushing to the algorithm. We've got students being taught the procedures before we were doing the conceptual understanding. We're not using the CRA model. We're not using the concrete fading model. We know that that's important. But the biggest thing is to think about, if you think about it for a sec, that why aren't teachers changing their pedagogical practice? We ask them to change. We want them to include number talks. We want them to try three-act maths in problem-based lessons. We want them to do building thinking classrooms. We want them to allow students to struggle with problems first before we formalize and before we bring in the algorithms later. There's a reason that teachers aren't going down that pathway as quickly as we think they should, even though we're unfolding this pathway for them and giving them so much resources and tools to use. Is because if you think about almost every teacher that we have in our buildings right now, they went through a system that did not look like that. They went through a mathematics. They learned mathematics the way that they're teaching mathematics. They learned it through the way I learned it and the way you probably learned it, which was the algorithms, the rush to the algorithms, the numbers, the abstract. I never thought about the conceptual understanding. I never thought about models and different strategies of solving the problem. So you've got an army of teachers who learn math this way and still know math as that. And are comfortable with that in their classrooms because that's all they really know. And we're asking them to change their pedagogy and they're resisting because they're just not comfortable with the mathematics the way you've learned how to become comfortable with the mathematics at that level. They know that if I start class today at this time and I follow the procedures and I get to the end, I will have covered that particular lesson with my students. We have to help our teachers. This is the main piece, is we have to help our teachers build their own proficiency of mathematics. Until we do, until we say, how many PD sessions have we done this year that help them just understand math for their own math, their own mathing? Is that a word, Kyle? I don't know.
It is today.
If we think about it, if we say the only focus of this session today is for you to get comfortable doing math, whether it's adding fractions or whether it's multiplying two digit by two digit numbers, whether it's solving two-step equations or doing logarithms, have we helped our teachers understand math the way we're asking them to teach it? Because the answer most times is no. Most times we haven't done that. And we can't figure out why they're not changing their practice. It's because we've not really focused on that. That's the building capacity stage. It has to be part of our PD plans moving forward. And we've got to think about, how do we help them understand the five different proficiencies of mathematics? We focus on this one area, but not this other area. And oftentimes it's really just pedagogy.
Yeah. And I think this also helps us to answer one of the earlier questions we had, which is like, why don't teachers, or what do we do if the teachers don't have an aligned vision with what we and what research wants? And the reality is because they don't have the capacity to understand that. And until they do understand that, until they're able to do the math conceptually themselves, until they have an understanding of what that looks like and sounds like, they can't grasp what it is you're even trying to achieve. It seems like some fictional thing to them because it is fictional to them. They haven't experienced it. So it should make sense to us now that when we get to this stage, we go, holy smokes, building capacity now. Also, keeping in mind, this is a flywheel, but it doesn't mean that we can't start working on building capacity while we're doing our vision planning. Because what you're going to recognize is that if teachers are having a hard time sort of coming around to some of the things that we want to see in our district, then we're going to have to start doing more math with them so that they can build that capacity and they can have their own epiphanies. I always like to say, when you have an epiphany in life, not just mathematics, but in life, it's like you are now enlightened, like you are thinking differently than you ever did in the past. It's like you couldn't imagine what it was like before it happened to you. And now that it has happened to you, you're like, oh my gosh, this is life-changing. For me, in mathematics, this has happened so many times in my career that I am telling you right now, it is what actually made me excited to teach math again. When you see teachers that are down on themselves and feeling like, you know, that their wheels are spinning in the mud, Their wheels are spinning in the mud because they're using a practice that you know probably isn't going to help all students. And they need to do what you're trying to get them to do. But until they see it themselves, they cannot implement what it is you're after them to implement. So this work isn't like a wait till stage three until we start helping teachers with this capacity building. This is something that it might be the starting point for you in the vision setting process. So your objective might be to help more teachers recognize that these effective teaching practices are what we want for our district. That might be your starting point where you are.
And until you decide that that is one of my objectives. So if we go back to our objectives, we say, you know, don't pick too many. We almost always insist that one of those objectives is to strengthen that mathematics proficiency for those teachers and administrators. You won't see the change. Michael and Morgan here from West Carrollton School District in Ohio. And Michael will openly admit that they had no focus before they started thinking about these four stages. And when they started to focus on that proficiency, and specifically, they did a lot of work on models, strategies, moving from the conceptual into the procedural fluency and talking about real fluency, that's when they started to see the shifts in pedagogy. He didn't see those shifts in pedagogy until he made the focus to build capacity, like what Kyle's saying, alongside the pedagogy. We have to do both because you just don't want to build capacity and then pedagogy. You want both to be simultaneously. So until you do decide that that's going to be one of my objectives, some of those other areas won't change as fast. That wheel will keep going slow until you've decided building capacity is a major focus for us.
And I want to just put a rubber stamp on this. I saw this come up in the chat, this idea that many don't want to change their thinking. The reality is no one wants to change their thinking. You don't want to change yours. I don't want to change mine. Nobody wants to change their thinking. They have to change. They have to experience the change in thinking. So that's kind of the rubber stamp that we have on this. And with this particular scenario in this school district, they were doing a lot of amazing things, but the spaghetti at the wall approach, like many of us have done. And again, we openly say it to all of our partners, like we've been there. We know what it's like. You're just trying your best to do all the things that we know we want to see in our classrooms. But when we get intentional and then we actually do the work and you start seeing teachers have those epiphanies, when you won't go in there and maybe it's a coach in a classroom who models something and it's conceptual and the teacher goes, I never knew that. And then you look and they see one of their students that has behavioral issues because they've disconnected from mathematics many years ago. And they're sitting there and they're saying things about the numbers and the mathematics that they've never seen in their classrooms before. The epiphanies start to come. It's not overnight, but that work goes, that flywheel, and you start to see that. And I'm telling you, the energy you get and the teacher gets and the kids get, when they start to see that coming together, you start to go, all right, we're on to something here. We're on to something. Let's keep moving on this.
All right, Kyle, let's keep moving on. We got one more stage to go. We want to get folks out the door on time. It's been an hour. We planned for 75 minutes, so we've got some time here. But the fourth stage is inspiring growth. And really, when we think about this, this was like that very first question is, how do I inspire those teachers to change? Like this is plays that one question you were just addressing is really where we're at right now is, how do I keep my teacher, or how do I help my teachers see that investing in their own professional development will make their job easier over time? Because that's really what we want. We want them to see that there is an investment here. But if you do make that, it's going to be easier for you. We want them to think the way you think, that there is value in changing our craft and strengthening our trees. So it's kind of thinking like one of the questions we have to answer is, are we planning to help our teachers do that? And that is one of the hardest things we can do. This is part of the flywheel approach. And like what you said, Kyle, is it doesn't have to wait to the end. It's not like do this, then this, then this. It's like all these things are interacting together. But how will we help our teachers gain buy-in this year? And there's really two areas that we've been focusing on a lot. There's lots of different ways you can get teachers to focus and buy into what they're doing. But I think there are two main things that we know have helped the leaders that we've been working with change their ecosystems. One is building relational trust. You know, we talked with Jim Strachan on the podcast a number of years ago, and you, Kyle, you had some work with Jim about building relational trust in classrooms, because the reality is we've got lots of coaches going in and we've got teachers that are being coached by coaches or they need help. We need to build trust between those interactions. Teachers are not going to change if they don't see that every interaction with a coach, with an administrator, with curriculum consultant, or any sort of leader takes something off their plate instead of put something on their plate. Because right now, it's a lot of times every interaction is something putting on their plate. Staff meetings, something on their plate. IEPs, on their plate. Oh, I've got a PLC, on their plate. They think everything is a load instead of a removal. We need to shift that focus. And that relational trust can start to shift that focus as long as we as coaches or we as leaders helping our coaches understand that every time you go into a classroom, you have to be seen as someone who's helping someone take something off their plate. What's a pebble that's in their shoe that you can remove today? It might not be on your objective list that one period, but it will be down the line. And so if you have to create that relational trust first and foremost, so that has to be established before they will start to change that way, because you can't coach them without listening to where their pebbles are and then helping them pluck those pebbles. Now, this is where your creativity gets to come into play too, is if you carefully kind of orchestrate when you pluck a pebble, how do you plug that or get rid of that pebble, but like replace it so that everything's still smooth with one of your objectives. Kyle, I do want to talk about psychological ownership, but I know that you've got probably some stuff to say about relational trust before we jump over to the other one.
Yeah, well, you know what? If you flip ahead here, I just want to mention for Jim Strachan, I have learned so much from this individual. That's probably the worst image of me ever, John. So I appreciate the screenshot.
Yeah, but you look very happy there.
Yeah, Jim Strachan, I have learned so much alongside him. And why I want to mention Jim's work around relational trust is, first and foremost, Jim, I met through an opportunity to engage in learning. And right from day one, Jim was a friend, a colleague, and he was helpful. And all along the way, I thought that we were just good sort of friends. We got along. But I recognized many years later that he was helping me to better understand what relational trust really is. And he was employing it as we built our relationship. And now I could look back at that and say, wait a second, did he manipulate me? And I'm going to say, no, he actually influenced me positively by helping me become a better educator and ultimately a better person. And this is the same work that we want for our educators. We want our educators to come out of this process feeling like, whoa, that just happened. I didn't even know it was happening, right? Like if we can get as close to that feeling for educators, it's not going to feel like another thing, because that's not what it's about. It's about building that trust. It's about them learning alongside them. So there is a link there. Also on our podcast, listening to Jim's work, you will love it. Mentoring for All is his work, and he is on the podcast. So head on to the archives on the Make Math Moments site to check out more about Jim.
Yeah. And that, I just wanted to kind of build on that relational trust. Like you said, you looked at that interaction as a friendly, we're friends first. And then you realized he was helping you this whole time, wrap your mind around what's important, how to change things, how to feel comfortable and confident with what you were doing. That's actually the approach, Kyle, we take when we work with districts. I'm going to shout out to Annie. Annie's like, I wasn't listening to this. Annie, give us a wave. Give us a wave. She's like, no, don't. She's like, she told us one of the times, she's like, those sessions that we have, is we've been building relational trust this whole time, because we know that without that trust, we're not going to take the actions that we want. And I know that you've had some great success on the work that you've been doing, Annie, in your district, and thinking about that. I think you've even used the word that our sessions sometimes were therapy sessions. It's like we were like unpacking the things that we really needed to work on. Like those are the coaching interactions we have to create with our teachers. Kyle, I'm going to go back to the other piece to kind of wrap things up here on the final piece, which was psychological ownership. This is another area that we need to think about. There's been a lot of talk about psychological safety. We actually built this into one of our courses on our online platform in the Academy about assessment. But in one of those pieces, we needed to make sure that our students felt safe in our classrooms. Our teachers need to also feel safe in their classrooms as well. They need to feel like the safety is there for them to make mistakes. Those things are what make change possible. Google did a self-survey on what makes teams successful in Google headquarters, published the results, very famous results. And they said the number one thing was psychological safety. Teams that worked the best together felt that they could share their thoughts and their brainstorming with each other without feeling attacked or without feeling pushback. Our teachers need that too in our classrooms. But I think what's even more important with our teachers is psychological ownership. We need our teachers to feel like they own a piece of the work that they're doing. They own this learning. They own their own change. If we're after them to kind of like take ownership in their own learning, we better establish how we can help them with their psychological ownership. And that's got three components, which is control over the work that they have. Are we giving autonomy to the work that's happening in our classrooms? Are we making them trust that they can take mistakes in that environment? Giving them inside information, which is intimate knowledge. It's like, how do we help our teachers get that inside info? Think about it. Every time you've had inside info on something, you felt part of the group. You felt part of this ownership that this team had. So thinking about going back to the vision planning, the design stage, if we can incorporate our teachers and give them that inside info, this is the way mathematics is going. This is the way you want mathematics to go. And you had a hand in it. You got to steer the conversation. We all did this together. That's inside info. Teachers will have ownership of that. And when they have ownership of that, they start to make changes on their own. The other thing is time and effort. And this one's a big one. I think this one is one of the things I think we almost need to really think about the work that we're doing, because it also ties back to the design stage. If we're just throwing spaghetti at the wall, think about those puzzle pieces are moving around. A lot of times in this experience, I had this experience as my 19 years in the classroom, is every year it felt like there were new initiatives. Every year, something was being added to my plate. Every year, I had an interaction with a coach or our consultant, and it was a different focus. One year it was questioning. One year it was assessment. These are all important things, but every time it was something new. And when that happens, and every time it's something new, a teacher is going to eventually go, this is something new, and next week it's going to be something different. So why do I spend time now learning this when you're going to change the focus 2 years from now, or a year from now, or 6 months from now? If that's the case, I'm not going to make the change now, because you're not invested in it. I'm not invested in it. We have to think about the time and effort, which is like, think about the sunk cost fallacy, Kyle, is we have to make sure that if we're going to say this is important, that's where objectives and our key results come in. If this is important, let's make sure they know it's important, and let's dedicate time and effort to making sure that we all are moving forward on this, and we're not just throwing it out the window at the end of the year. This is what matters. And that's why that momentum takes time at the beginning, because we should really think about what matters, because I don't want to switch it partway through, because teachers are just going to like not give in. They're not going to buy in. And that's a big component of why teachers aren't buying in right now, is because we switched the focus too much. And if we can keep it streamlined, then eventually, if every time you came into that classroom or every time you saw them, you kept talking about the same things, eventually the teacher's going to be like, this is not going away. This is the way math is. This is the vision that we have in our district for math. They're going to start seeing it in other classrooms, and they're going to get on board. That's how we inspire that growth, is we have to be very consistent with the work that we're doing.
I love it. I love it, John. So what we're going to do is we're going to take one moment here just to share something that will be in the workbook, but we're not going to speak to it too much right now. And that is the book Switch. We are big fans. And inside of the workbook, you're going to notice that we have a section here dedicated to it. Definitely helpful for you to help to redirect or direct the rider and motivate that elephant and shape that path. There is a lot of value there as you think about that analogy. And if you read the book, or maybe you've read the book, that can help you really stay on track, stay on the path, as we say it, and clear that path so that you can take all of this effort that you're putting in and have the greatest impact and influence you can possibly have. Well, friends, I don't think today we need to do a summary of the tree, the six parts of an effective math program, since we discussed it at length throughout that particular webinar. But what we can do is we can tell you that we've got some great, great tools for you, and we'd love you to dig in with us here. So if you found this to be helpful, note that you can get your classroom or district math program report by heading to makemathmoments.com/report, and it will highlight which parts of the tree that you want to dig into. And John, I think we've got some additional goodies that go along with the training we just had for those who are interested.
We do. So we mentioned our workbook throughout this training, and we talked about
pieces of the workbook that you can put into place. You can get that workbook and start doing the planning necessary. We've got all the steps in there for you to carry this out for your school or for your school district. Or like Kyle said, if you're a classroom teacher, you can still put these things into a place and think big picture. So you can head on over to makemathmoments.com/4stages. Register there. And you'll get access to the video that goes along with this, as well as the workbook. The workbook will be there for you to download and print off or save for future use or put it to use right away. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/4stages, all one word.
Awesome, friends. And show notes, links to resources, complete transcripts, and all kinds of other goodies, including the links that John just mentioned, are over on the makemathmoments.com website. Today's episode is episode 280. Yes, can you believe that? 280 episodes under our belt. So you can head to makemathmoments.com/episode280 and you can grab those links and dig in. Well, until next time, my friends, I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr.
High fives for us.
And a high five for you.
If you are a district leader of mathematics, a math coach, a math curriculum coordinator, a superintendent, and principal, getting teacher buy-in for effective math teaching practice is top of mind. And plans only go so far. You can make, you know, detailed plans and carefully designed goals with clear objectives and key results that are measurable. But that can feel like it all falls flat if we can't engage our teachers in the work. Working with teachers who do not want to change their teaching practices is one of the most frustrating and challenging parts of our job. How do I help teachers engage in effective teaching practices when they keep pushing us away? If you can't reach the tipping point in mass adoption of effective mathematics teaching strategies, then it's likely we won't see student improvement in mathematics. We have a free training an accompanying workbook for leaders of mathematics like you. The Make Math Moments team, myself, John, and Kyle, walk you through our 4-stage process we use with district partners to create clear, measurable, sustainable PD action plans, but more specifically on how to also get teacher buy-in so that it drives student engagement. So step one, register for this free training, get your planning workbook, and then watch the training. Schedule some time on your calendar so you can watch it and go through the workbook. After completing that workbook, you're going to have a clear, measurable vision, action plan for mathematics to get more teacher buy-in, but also be able to hit your goals for the 2024-2025 school year. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/4stages to start this free training.